Our high school guidance counselor used to ask us what you would do if you had $1 million, didn't have to work. And then invariably, whatever you'd say, that was supposed to be your career. So if you wanted to fix old cars, then you're supposed to be an auto mechanic.
So what did you say?
I never had an answer. I guess that's why I'm working at Inatec.
No, you're working at Inatec because that question is bullshit to begin with. If everyone listened to her, there'd be no janitors because no one would clean up if they had $1 million.
If I had $1 million.
Talking about millions of dollars.
What would you do if you had $1 million?
I'll tell you what I'd do, man. Two chicks at the same time, man.
We're living in a material world, and I am a material girl or boy.
Well, what about you now? What would you do?
Besides two chicks at the same time?
Well, yeah.
Nothing.
Nothing, huh?
I would relax. I would sit on my ass all day. I would do nothing.
Well, you don't need $1 million to do nothing, man. Take a look at my cousin. He's broke. Don't do
if I had a million.
Hello and welcome back to Stacks and Jacks. I'm Tom Howell. Andrew on the board. S&P futures down 30. NASDAQ futures down 143. This is after a down day yesterday. We've got oil through, not West Texas, but we've got Brent through $100. And we've got the 10-year through 4.8. Yet everybody's convinced we're doing this right. I don't know. Do we have both John and Carl?
You do. Good morning.
As they say in the South Side, the Bodias?
The Bodias.
Something like that.
You see, Jen knows Southside. You know, near the Bodies. Anyway, we got the news is, I don't know what the news is. It's kind of bumping along. Yesterday, another country's grabbing all their gold reserves out of the U.S. because they don't trust anybody here not to steal them from them. I don't know. Are we gaining by this, pissing people off stuff? I don't know. I mean, it's nice if you gain from that. I don't know if we're gaining from that. What do you guys think?
Oh, I don't know. I think, Chief, the instability right now is systemic. Everybody, of course, wants to point at one thing or another. But look, when you have a market that is trading at the kind of multiples that we're trading at today on hype and BS, when you have, I'm sure you saw this. Thing that's out from the OpenAI guys that they supposedly think they solved a very old open math problem. By the way, the allegation raised by a professor who has had an interest in this problem for a very long period of time is that they may have stolen research information that he was doing using AI tools, including theirs. And that's how they discovered that someone was interested in this, and then they tasked several $1 million worth of compute at it, essentially to steal his idea and then resolve the issue with money that he could never have raised and spent.
Nobody'd ever do that.
Well, Chief, there's a very, if you think about it, the issue is not, I mean, this is one of those paradox, mathematics has a bunch of paradox kind of problems that people have had postulates as to how you might go about resolving them, but proof is a different thing, right?
Yeah.
So, I mean, there's a lot of egg-headed kind of stuff that
goes
on.
Plus, a lot of these problems are not necessarily math as the three of us know. It's not coming up with an answer. It's a different type of mathematics in a lot of this thing. It's math, but it's sort of not math, right?
Well, it is, but it's not. I mean,
yeah.
There's the whether or not there's actually a practical use for many of these things is an open question, right? I mean, but sometimes there is. But the specifics of the incident aren't the problem. The problem is that we have these companies that have built these huge edifices with data centers and the tens of billions of dollars worth of GPUs going in and huge power consumption requirements and this and that and the other thing. And I have, I have my site on a cloud host primarily because it's actually cheaper and they're very stable. It's inexpensive, okay? But part of the Nowhere in what I agreed to when I did that was an agreement that they could rummage around in there and steal the code and data set that's on that machine. It's very similar to the safety deposit box that I have at the bank. If the bank has a legal requirement to open it for because somebody's got a subpoena or whatever have you, then I have to expect that the bank is going to comply with that legal process and open my safe deposit box. Because that's, the law is the law. However, short of that, what's in there is none of their damn business.
Ask them then. If they want to be in there, it's their business. Never mind.
Well, okay. Every company in the world that has computers working on things, I don't care what it is, has, and every person in the world that has computers and uses computers, and that's like all of us, right? Phone in our pocket, et cetera, et cetera. We all have information in these machines that we consider to be our property. It's ours. And unless I've agreed that somebody else can have it on an unbridled basis, and there are things that I do. There are, obviously the articles that I publish are there for people to read them. Duh. Right? There is software that I have released into the public that I have compiled and put together and arranged in certain ways that the license allows me to do and to redistribute that I used, and I've decided that I'm going to allow people to have that and use it. Okay, fine. There's no harm. There's no foul there. But that's not the situation here. This guy purchased tokens to run AI-related things from these companies. Neither he or anyone else ever agreed in advance that whatever it is that he put into there as a prompt or whatever have you was theirs to steal.
Well,
and that's what he alleges happened. Now, there's no proof, but guess what? It would be almost impossible to prove it, number one. All right, because where in this huge volume of data is that specific thing, right? Secondly, what has to be proved before it constitutes being stolen? And oh, by the way, if you're using these tools for business intelligence where you're asking questions, the fact that you're asking the question is proprietary information and valuable.
Well, okay, so there's no disagreeing with you here, but I want Mr. Flanagan, since he's still an attorney, even if he wasn't, you never stopped being one. I had explained that to a couple guys last night. It's like being in the Marines or being in the mob, type of thing. but why, the thing of it is, Carl, whenever you rant or rave on this stuff, and I think John, listens most of the time, and you know I'm always with you. But what I don't get, and I'm not asking you guys for an answer, but this is, it is, I don't know, I won't call it, our arguments that we have now about people doing nasty stuff and stealing stuff from people, they've been there forever. I mean, which, by the way, I'm not going to be one of those guys, what about? I'm not saying, but I mean, you go back to my whole mentality on this was formed by a priest at Notre Dame, believe it or not. Oh, man, wait, no, I believe in police. This guy was Father Fitzgerald wasn't an attorney, was he? Jan, I don't think so.
He taught
economics, and he was a very renowned... God, what did the guy live to, like 108 or something? He was a very renowned arbitrator and binding arbitration guy and mediator. And he taught unions, and he taught patents and things like that. Virtually every big patent was stolen, and there was never anybody that... I mean, people... And now, we have it to the point where it's in the White House in their pals. You know, it's at a point where that it is so open now that people are disgusted by it. But it sort of, and I'm not making excuses for anybody who's ever done it. But Carol, I don't think you were on, John. I think you were when Katie was on talking about working on research in hospitals. And who puts up the money, and who actually might have an idea, some of the research people, how you have to sign off anything you did that is not your property, even if you... There are people that are 22 years old that have solved huge problems, right? But you have to sign right away that it's not yours, even though you just did it, for God's sake. I mean, you know, and this whole mess you're talking about, Carl, is so embedded. Everybody thinks... I mean, look at... Do you think Microsoft... How much of the stuff that Microsoft has... is really theirs? Is it even 50%?
I don't think any of it.
I'm gonna be
very,
a little more
very
sure.
Little of it. Very little.
Yeah. So, but I mean, if you have a patent for, by the way, did you hear a story about MapQuest the other day? I'll tell that in a second. But if you had who's the one with the maps now? Is it Google? The Google Maps or
Google
whatever?
Earth?
Google and Apple are the two big ones.
Okay, so the first one was an outfit called MapQuest. So, but even say they bought MapQuest, which they didn't, by the way. But even if you did, there's stuff in there. I gotta believe, Carl, you're a genius on this. I have to believe there's stuff in there that was revolutionary and was an invention, like by somebody that worked for God knows who, Carl Inc. And all of a sudden, you know, Carl dies or something, and somebody buys this thing at a bank. Well, this guy's the guy who actually did it. I mean, anybody remember the name Kodak? Kodak stole the Brown camera, the Brownie Instamatic from Brown Camera Company. I mean, duh. I mean, does anybody right. think that Alexander Graham Bell really invented the telephone? Duh. I mean, this is, I don't know how it's never, and Carol, you and I went through this week ago Friday. We never drive any of these things home. Nobody ever, I mean, Katie's story that one day about the people who give money for a disease and the government puts the money in and some guy goes after it, maybe a researcher, maybe you come up with a cure, but you come up with something, some kind of a treatment, and somebody else buys the thing, they make $1 billion with a 20 or a 17-year patent, and the people who actually did it never get anything. I mean, even the guy that put up the money for it never gets anything. Why, this has become part of our history. Why is that? I mean, and it seems like it's going even worse now.
Well...
But I mean, if this was you, and I'm not denigrating Mr. Flanagan at all, what are you going to do if it's you? You're going to hire John Flanagan and Bill Murphy and Art Murphy, the two attorneys I was with last night.
I'm not going to use any tool for business intelligence where they have any sort of a record, whether proved or not, of stealing proprietary information from other people.
Right, but I'm asking, what is your, and maybe this is a Flanagan question, what is your, I mean, I'm not denigrating, you know, John's attorney stuff, but he was, you know, John is more of a property and a lawyer kind of thing, so is Art Murphy, Bill Murphy's a criminal guy. What if I hire those three people, every one of them very accomplished in their field, very smart? Well, you're gonna challenge this patent from Microsoft. Good luck with that one. I mean, all the enforcement, even if it's your patent, is on you. Well, guess what? They'll string us out for 10 years. That's what Kodak did, the Brown Camera Company.
They've got a lot more money for a lot more expensive lawyers.
So. Brown Camera Company, by the way, ended up winning that lawsuit a year after they had to sell out to Kodak because they couldn't afford the legal fees.
Right, but see, this is one of the... Okay, so... Corporate espionage is not a new problem, duh.
I'm not talking about espionage. Right? I'm talking about flat-out stealing.
Well, that's espionage is stealing.
Well, no, espionage is learning about it. Stealing is deciding to do something about it after you know about it.
Yeah, okay. Point being, this is not a new thing, right?
But that doesn't make it right. I mean, it makes it worse.
I don't think anybody argues that it's new. The question here is the volume of such things. Okay, so and the deliberate evasion of legal process that has been set up over long periods of time. You know, you look at, for example, Chief, what, you know, going back to what Amazon did with sales taxes, okay, which is another example of the same thing. The Quill decision was very clear. And you know, that went all the way to the Supreme Court. All right. The Quill decision was essentially, if you do not have nexus in a given area, you do, you know, business connectivity in a given area, you cannot be compelled to be essentially a tax snitch and a reporter for that area. Right? It was a jurisdictional decision that you have to put your boot on the ground in some form or fashion in an area to be able to be compelled to answer responses. Okay, that is the state of the law. So what Amazon did was cheat. They set up captive LLCs and then claimed there was no nexus, which was a lie. It was a blatant, bald lie.
Okay, well, my theme here is a little different.
No, but okay, the difference is only where the obligation rests.
No, we're on two different pieces of the chessboard here. So I want Mr. Flanagan to referee. You're on the part where, we'll use the Amazon case as a case. The question came down to one of collections, not of liability.
But here's the thing: without being able to subpoena Amazon, which doesn't have nexus, you can't go after the people who otherwise should pay.
You can. John, be the referee here. Here's what I see in that, because I used to see people in the Best Buy looking at the model number of a Sony TV in order.
Of course.
Okay, but what I'm saying is, if you go to the website of the University of Illinois, there's a form you're supposed to fill out.
Oh, I know. Okay. Every state has one.
Let's start from the beginning here. If you buy a TV from Flanagan's TV in Iowa,
right,
over the internet, and the Flanagan's TV in Iowa does not have to collect Illinois tax from you.
Right.
That doesn't mean that I don't have to pay it.
That's right.
All right, so we're on the same page here, but what I'm saying is now, but I buy the TV. I buy five TVs.
Right.
I'm into the state for $800 at this point. Okay, yeah. And there's a form I'm supposed to sign, and actually if it's over, John, help me out. If it's over $500, you're supposed to do it quarterly. Otherwise,
yeah,
you do it annually.
Yeah, well, it's like anything else. But, yeah, okay, it's like so, any other tax. It's but, like any other. Yeah.
But so one of them was who actually had to collect it. All right.
Correct.
The other was the information that every swinging dick out there, we're never going to come after you. Knock yourself out. There'll never be any enforcement on this unless we don't like you, like the guy who was head of the Sun Times, where he had the paintings he bought in New York, shipped in New Jersey. Unless there's some serious selective enforcement. You go, girl. Now, that's my problem with the whole thing. I mean, I don't necessarily want to force the guy in North Dakota to collect Illinois taxes and ship them here. But I mean, I think the Supreme Court is right. But the point being, I still owe it.
I understand that.
Somehow the overriding thing, no governor, or be it Pritzker Democrat, Brown or Republican, no governor wants to tell people, by the way, you better pay this. This lack of enforcement is almost like a political bone you give to people. You just buried the Best Buy store who's paying property taxes.
Well, yeah, exactly. Yeah. So the reality is that what you did was destroy your own constituents.
Well, plus, you put the state broke.
Well, I understand that, but I'm saying you wrecked your own constituents.
Yeah, you wrecked the Best Buy who's paid taxes in the city of Chicago.
Yeah, exactly. And Amazon and Jeff Bezos laughs all the way to the bank.
I mean, John, you're the attorney. Why every place you look, you see that? You see this absolute lack of enforcement. Unless you're a rum-dum and you filed for a... you know, one of the payroll protection things, never even got the check. Unless you're the low-hanging fruit, why do we not go after any of these people? Is it all payoff? Is it all we're too busy?
It's selective enforcement or non-enforcement. I mean, look at the models we rely on or created internationally. I mean, here you got China, who by all standards should be a pariah nation.
yeah.
for the way they cheat and steal everything, you know, whether it's nailed down or not. But they're too big to be a pariah. And, you know, you got the World Trade Organization, which is hardly going to, you know, assess these crimes or investigate anything or make any meaningful penalties against the Chinese for what they've done. And everybody knows it, and we know it too, but we still do business with them. We relax our, you know, moral standards, you know, because there's other, you know, more important things on the table at the moment. But when you create a culture like that, where thievery is enabled and subsidized, well, you know, how do you ever get it back?
You're going to get more of it. Yeah, show me the incentive. While you're on that,
I told the story a million times. It'll be very, very brief. I went to one of the Economic Club of Chicago things, and I ended up talking to first a lady who worked in the Chinese consulate. And then another lady afterward, you know, if you want to talk to people, I don't want to give anybody cocktail hour points, but get to the cocktail party early. When I say that, many of the drinks before dinner type of thing, get there early, there'll be 400 people in a room, and there are these tall stand-up tables that maybe 60 people can be at.
Right.
So the first thing you do is grab a drink and plant your fat ass next to one of these tables. People have to come and talk to you, whether they want to or not, because they want a place to put their brink down instead of holding it. And if the penalty is talking to you, they'll pay it. How's that for a way? So anyway, and the lady says, well, I said, what if somebody wanted to bring something over in China? Because we had just had a guest, and it talked about having to bring his coating stuff over to China because all the pot manufacturers went to China, and you can't sell coatings in Western Illinois if the pots are being made in China. Duh. So she goes, yeah, well, if somebody wants to do that or feels the need, you come to the embassy and we'll put you in touch with a guy, and he'll, you know, describe the industry, and he'll figure out the province where you should be, where your suppliers are, and blah, 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 your customers. And by the way, this guy will lead you through the whole thing and make sure the place gets built and you get people that show up and never go on strike. You essentially have your crook, you know, your party crook, and it's probably a little too harsh, but maybe not so much harsh. And so if Carl Flanagan and Chief decide to go over there, and now we know the rules, we got a guy we're paying to make sure nobody bitches about making 30 cents an hour, we're just as much a part of this as the Chinese government. So, I mean, Mr. Flanagan is correct in saying they kind of are sleaze bags, but by the way, we just opted in. You know, so
I prefer to do business that way.
Yeah, really? I only got to pay these guys 30 cents an hour? Where do I sign up? I mean, it's not like we're if you showed up at a gas station and the gas was 20 cents cheaper and you see the guy in the back room, like, beating the employees, and you say, well, that's okay, as long as I get my gas 20 cents cheaper, I guess at some point it's on you, isn't it?
Well, and we've also decided, well, if we, you know, want to invest over, you know, in a plant in China or something, we've already conceded, you know, that they're going to have the Chinese entity or the Chinese government will have a controlling interest in it. So what right are we going to have to protest anything that we want to protest?
John, I've raised this particular case many times. It's one of the more notorious ones. Fellows used to be a United States company that made paper shredders.
Didn't the same thing happen with the copier guys?
Yeah, I think so. But Fellows was a particularly obscene instance of this, in that they had multiple patents in the United States, and, you know, the worldwide registrations, but, you know, they were a U.S. manufacturer. Okay, and they wanted to sell shredders in China. Duh, right? People would need them there. The Chinese insisted that they put a factory over there in order to have access to their market. So they did. Immediately, the Chinese ripped off all of the patented technology that Fellows had, started making cheap copies of their stuff, and selling it for half the price, including through Amazon. And the company was literally destroyed.
Were they selling it here too?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, and the company was literally destroyed. They're gone.
Well, didn't they do the same thing with the printers? But they just did it for Chinese consumption, and the printing company, I think, ended up way better than they were, even though a lot of the, sell a lot over there. They sold, 5 million printers, and China sold another 10 that they stole from them, but these guys are still like five ahead.
Yeah, it's...
I mean, the math is not all that easy sometimes.
No, the math isn't necessarily all that easy, but this is a different kind of situation, okay? This is the same kind of thing that's going on with these flock cameras and the data collection and the way it's being used. The Supreme Court has held three different cases. The government has taken three bites at this apple, and they've lost all three times. That the system, you're in a public place, you do not have an expectation of privacy. However, the systemic collection and distillation of your data is, in fact, an invasion of the Fourth Amendment without a warrant. Okay? Now, there have been three cases that rested that the Supreme Court has decided on this. One had to do with geolocation warrants, which the government has attempted to use. They've got swatted down on that. Then there was another one using third-party collected data the same way, again, without a warrant. They got swatted down on that. And then they tried to go to the cell carriers and get what amounts to, from a operational perspective, the same thing from the tower data that your phone has to collect and transmit in order for it to work. Okay? In other words, without your phone and the tower coordinating and knowing where you are, your phone doesn't work. Right? So it's a necessary component of you having cellular telephone service. And the Supreme Court has ruled three times that the systemic use of this information on an individualized, to identify individualized people, requires a warrant. So it's a search under the Fourth Amendment, and therefore it requires a warrant. However, the cop sitting on the side of the road with a hot list of stolen cars, he doesn't have to have a warrant to do that. He can see the car go by with the license plate. So they've drawn this distinction. Every single one of these businesses that is operating this kind of a fashion today, there was just an article up that LG, which is a major television manufacturer, among other things.
And crummy refrigerators.
They make computer monitors, yeah. They make dishwashers, they make all sorts of stuff. But their televisions are quite literally hacking not just your Wi-Fi, but your neighbor's Wi-Fi, if they have a default password on their router. They are collecting everything, including your voice, because they have AI-powered search, and they're storing it if they're offline temporarily or turned off, and then transmitting it when turned back on.
I have a question for you from the listener, but I mean, this is, again, more of a legal question. It was a thing, just what you're talking about, Carl. Somebody wrote into Quora, and I get this thing all the time. I don't know how I got stuck with these guys,
yeah. But
some dude was talking about, somebody said the Constitution says this, and the guy starts ranting about the Constitution. He goes, the Constitution is an incredible document, but if people don't want to pay any attention to it,
well, yeah,
it's kind of useless. He said, just like what you're talking about, Supreme Court has ruled that, by the way, Supreme Court has also ruled that hospitals can't have like five different prices or 10 different prices. They don't.
Oh yeah, and how many people have had that? Yeah.
But this guy, of course, he doesn't like Trump, but he launches into it and says that they said they struck down tariffs, but the guy still does tariffs every day. He doesn't pays. There is no. You can look at the document and see the separation of power, but there is no Supreme Court police. The police is the executive branch.
Chief. In 1979. The practices of the pharmaceutical and medical industry were ruled unconstitutional, and by the way, a violation of 15 U.S.C.
Yeah, but there is no Supreme Court police, so maybe nobody envisioned.
Well, I understand that, but we're talking about felonies here, and they're been ignored daily since.
The guy's point was, when you put this together this way, you assume people were going to act in a manner where they respected the Constitution. If they don't, it's just a piece of paper to ignore.
Well, yeah.
Because there is no enforcement. By the way, the question on the table here, and I have a question for you that this reminded me of. Ask Carl if he thinks the government has a backdoor to Amazon and data for Americans.
Absolutely. It's not even a backdoor. This data is sold. By the way, what is Palantir's line of business? Do you know what it, do you know what they actually do?
I know because you told me that they sell stuff.
No, they announced they have made very public what their line of business is. Their line of business is taking the so-called anonymized, okay, de-identified data that is sold by data brokers all over the place, which people buy as a means of targeting advertising, okay? Their entire line of business is linking that back to you personally, your identity. That is what they do.
And they're trading 46 times revenue.
That's what the company does. Okay, now, explain to me, you never gave consent to that at any time. You may have given consent in, you know, in the 47,000 page terms of service that nobody reads. And by the way, if you say no, you can't use whatever it is, right? Whether it's Meta's thing or X or whatever, right? And then, of course, you get the, we've updated our terms of service. If you use the service or the thing after this date, you've agreed to
right.
it.
Oh, yeah.
Which is a contract of adhesion, and those have been ruled unconstitutional, too.
We don't pay attention to that.
Yeah, but nobody cares about these things. But you now have businesses whose entire business, their sole business, and Flock, by the way, has admitted that they do this too. Their entire business is taking that allegedly anonymous advertising usable data and attaching it back to your personal identity. And when it comes to these license plate readers and these other profiling tools, we're not just talking about the guy who drives the car. These firms are scanning your Bluetooth, your Wi-Fi, and your IMEI.
What are we going to... Again, this is a Mr. Flanagan question, probably. If 90% of the population doesn't care, how are we going to get any traction?
Well, yeah, you know,
I mean,
what?
Well, you have people that will gladly trade what you just said for convenience all day long.
Okay, right. Chief, what happens when it ends up like China, you said something they don't like, therefore you can't get on a train?
I didn't say I was for it. I'm asking. I'm saying, John, what I mean, nobody seems to care. Why is that?
They want people to be passive about this for obvious reasons, and you know it's already way ahead of where we are in Canada and in Europe. So I think it's just a matter of time before we become so acquiescent that we realize we have nothing that we can call private anymore. It's already well on that way.
We had a real quick story, then I have a question for Carl. Jan, one of the ladies and the people you became very good friends with on the trading floor, people can make or break your day, were the quote reporters. You know, because you'd be belt out an order or a price, and they would immediately put the thing on the screen, right? Now, you couldn't do it with the volume of options we have today, but they did in those days. Of course, we don't need the volume of options we have today, but that's another story. And there were some that were absolutely terrific, and one of them, lady's name was Juanita. And she was from Hawaii, and of course, she was a little stocky, so her name was Pineapple. I mean, everybody had a nickname. It wasn't necessarily the best. And she ended up working for the CBOE after the floor kind of closed. Once a week, I'd see her over at the Dunkin' Donuts. She got this huge honking cell phone. I don't know how she got the thing. It was twice the size of mine. And she'd always pay when she'd tap the thing. And I'd go tap it after her. She goes, "Tommy, what are you doing?" I said, "Pineapple, you're buying lunch. Thank you."
Yeah.
And she says, "What do you mean? You wouldn't do that?" I go, "I probably wouldn't, but I probably could if I knew what I..." I said, "What are you doing paying through that thing and giving these guys your ID number for a $3 coffee?" She goes, "Oh, yeah. they got all information anyway." I mean, she's like just resigned to the fact. Like, what's the difference? I mean, why should I pull out the $3 here when they've been tracing me the rest of my day? You know, type of thing. It's some part resignation, some part convenience. I don't know what the... But Carl, my question is, we drove to Indiana. Oh, by the way, Jan, you haven't driven that way. The along I-94, there's about a 4-mile stretch where some huge percentage of the trees are down. Whatever that thing went through, it went through.
Oh, yeah.
That's a tornado. Yeah. That was probably, well, I don't know if it was a derecho or...
Well, it was a 100-mile-an-hour lead wind.
Straight line winds, right,
from a thunderstorm. Yeah. I mean, Ogden Dunes, evidently, people have lake views that they never... But yeah. These trailer parks and there's stuff strewn all over the place, and all these trees are down. But you know, Audrey's like, what are all these towers? Well, I think I can recognize the micro towers, and I can sort of recognize the cell phone towers. But what are these ones that are like, God, Carl, they're like 300 feet in the air and they're skinny as hell. And boy, if you're driving a low flying plane, you better watch out for the thing. What are those things? They're skinny as can be, and they're like 300 feet high. What do those do?
Well, it depends on.
But there's very little on top. There's not. You can't see like a microwave dish or anything. It's just a little.
Right.
There's at the top. There's like it's like nothing there, and yet there's the tower.
Well, it may just be a regular radio transmitter. I mean, that's a regular radio tower. Is set up that way.
Why would they be in the middle of Northwest Indiana along the toll road?
Well, I don't know. I mean, that's, you know, there's another question, right?
But
are
they along the toll?
Yeah, there's a bunch of them. You know, I mean, they're off in the field, maybe half a mile away. But you surely can see them there. They're that tight, that high.
Are they surveillance cameras?
I mean, you see the ones that have all the dishes on them and stuff. Those are like microwave, right?
Those are microwave, but cellular typically have what look like flat panels on.
Yeah,
them.
Yeah. Well, some have both. Some have the round ones, right, and the flat. But then these things are totally different. They got to be four times as high, and they're just this little like needle that goes up.
Yeah, those are normally radio.
Okay.
Broadcast radio.
All right. Okay.
So or television.
Well, then it could be that. All right. Fair enough.
Yeah, and I mean that's because the way the radiation pattern that you want from those is, you know, circular and ground polarized, so that it, because there's no point in sending it out into space. There's no one out there.
Yeah. Well, that we know of.
Well, if they can both hear us, given how far it's gotten, and if they can get here. Get back here. We've got more serious problems at hand than all this stuff that we talk about every day.
Well, it's kind of hard to figure that whoever somebody is made all this stuff just for us.
Well, you know, if you think about the energy management issues and the laws of physics and all the things that you have to figure out a way to get around, right, in order to do that, making a bomb magically appear a la Scotty's transporter on Putin's desk, it becomes a rather trivial problem by comparison.
Yeah.
The first guy who figures out how to do that, everything changes in about 2 seconds.
Well, I tell you what, if I had one of those things, I could think of about four people in this world that I'd transport someplace. They could all they could all live together the rest of their lives.
Well, that's the other thing, too, is that I can grab you out of your chair, right?
Yeah. it's a... I always liked the part where in the transport room you had to be on the thing, but anywhere else they could just grab you wherever you were.
Well, you know, the theory is that you know, supposedly you had to have a pad on at least one end, so that's at least originally.
Well, maybe then we went away from that. We can snatch people.
Yeah.
The numbers are coming out this Friday.
Yep.
You got the
Fed. You got the Fed decision too.
Well, that next week. They just had it. It was just a week ago. He was on, or 2 weeks. He talked.
No. Fed rate decision is that next week?
Well, yeah, well, that's right. He talked to Jackson Hole. He didn't talk after. It must be next week.
Oh, it's the 15th, 16th.
Yeah.
Okay, it is next week.
So is this guy getting enough pressure?
Well, look, the IRX is sitting at 3.775 right now. Okay, now that's slightly above the current benchmark range. So if they were to go to 3.75 to 4, quarter point hike, you would now have the IRX in band. So by the data, the Fed follows the market. Market says rates are going up a quarter point.
Well, I was actually at this...
And I know that he's being yelled at from all quarters.
Oh, yeah.
Drop the rate, or we're going to ban every trade agreement that's ever existed. Yeah, okay.
How does Mr. Flanagan's the same age? How does somebody, something that was so front and center when we were younger, the inflation and the Fed and the money supply and all this stuff? I mean, it was everybody's conversation, for God's sake. It was what you learned at school. It was everybody saw the money supply number on Thursday night. It didn't matter if you were a welder, for God's sake, you look for it. Everybody, and now there was about five or six attorneys. I don't know where the hell we were sitting. And I go, hey Chief, give us a lecture on this interest rate stuff. Well, nobody seems to know what the hell you're talking about. And I said, well, long-term rates are supposed to be a combination of the real rate of interest, how much you're actually paying somebody for their money. And people have lost concept of that. And one guy goes, what do you mean paying somebody for their money? And I said, well, if you're building this bar, for instance, and we have this great idea, well, guess what? We need the wood for the bar. We need the coolers. We need a foundation. And oh, by the way, if we don't have any money, we got to borrow the money from somebody, right? And it's their money, and we need it, so we should, like, pay them for it. And they looked at me like I had four heads. I go, money is a factor of production like anything else. That's what banks do. They take people who have money, they pay them some rate to hold their money, and they loan it out to other people who have ideas or whatever, and they pay them more. And the part in the middle keeps the bank afloat, pays for the league team. I could have sworn I was reading somebody something that I was talking to third graders. Nobody had any idea what I was talking about. And I said, when you talk, and I don't know if you have an inflation rate on top of it, okay, if I loan you money, I want 3%. That's kind of been this rate of interest since Stone Age. But if I think the government is going to pour more money in towards going to be worth 10% less at the end of the year, well, I want that too. So I want my 3%, which should be the real rate, but because of what these bozos are doing with the money, I want that 10 too. And they looked at me, they had no idea what I was talking about. So how, now we have people from the government, you know, lobbing out there, we've got an interest, you know, inflation rate here, but we should just lower all these rates. Do they have any idea what they're talking about? I mean, or do they don't care, or are they just, it's all political, or what is it? I mean, this is not that difficult.
Our education, yours and mine, Carl's, I mean, it's different from what passes for education, say, in the last 10 or 20 years. And I think the main objective of education has been to detach, you know, the widest range of the population possible from having any interest or right to participation in discussions above a very low bar. And I mean, this, as you said, I mean, it used to be that anybody who could read a newspaper, and newspapers didn't have a lot of pictures or graphics or anything else. People actually had to read text. And there were, you know, if they had a paper that sampled international news or finance or whatever, you could get a pretty good read on the world if you were at all curious and had time to devote to it. You were not excluded deliberately from participating in discussions about it or going to the corner bar and fighting with your neighbors about it. You could do that, and a lot of people did, and you know, thank God they did. But now, and some of the people who would on paper look like the brightest people with the fanciest degrees and, you know, internships and everything else are part of this dumbed down class where they're above their pay grade in almost every level. And this is kind of the way I think the people making the decisions want it to be. They don't want a lot of scrutiny. They don't want the average person asking questions. They want you to think, that's not my department. I'll let somebody else worry about that. I'm really out of my element here. That's music to their ears.
When I was a freshman at Marist, one of the brothers, the Marist brothers, were all New Yorkers, right? Why they put a school up here, I have no idea, but they were all New Yorkers. They all had the accent and everything. And Brother Copper, was my freshman year, well, religion and English guy, might have been history, I don't know. Anyway, he taught everybody how to fold the New York Times in such a way where you could have one hand holding a strap on the subway, and you fold it like, you fold it in eighths, in such a way where you could turn the page. And he said this was an art form, but if everybody in New York knew how to do it, because there weren't many chairs. If you've ever been on a New York subway, there's very few chairs. There's these straps hanging down from the ceiling, so you grab one of the straps with one hand, and you're supposed to read the paper with the other. And he goes, well, you can't do it if you're used to sitting on a CTA car with the Tribune wide open. You're not going to do that standing. So, and he goes, everybody, he goes, all right, I get it. We're all going to start with the sports section. And maybe you're not going to read the, you know, the fashion section, but everybody should read the entire newspaper every day before you go to work. And everybody's sitting there going, he goes, that's how you keep in touch. That's why you're not a dumb, wondering what's going on.
Well, Chief, I mean, I had the Wall Street Journal and the Trib that I had a subscription when I ran MCS, and they were delivered at, they were in my office every day when I came in.
Well, yeah, I mean, I mean,
the Wall Street Journal is not a cheap subscription either.
No, yeah, no.
Okay, but here's the thing: if I want to know what the H was going on, well. And incidentally, if you're running a company, that's kind of an important thing, right?
But now everybody just gets snippets. You get snippets.
Well, the problem now is that you're not... Yes. And by the way, the veracity of what you've got out there. I mean, just take this take this plane crash that just happened, right, down in Miami.
Oh, by the way, because of you, I had myself listening to probably a 20-minute YouTube thing where some guy, all this stuff is public information. The thing in the air.
Yeah.
Tell you what, I'll send it to you. This guy was terrific. He had this.
You're talking about Bianco, probably. He does these on the regular, and he is very good.
He was talking about they were 500 feet over, and he goes they might have picked up 8-mile-an-hour tailwind, but if they're anywhere near the regular speed, it shouldn't have bothered them. But they were already they were 25, 30 miles an hour.
Well, they were 40 knots above.
Yeah, 40 knots above,
the top
band. And then,
yeah.
And then if the tailwind flipped a little, they actually were, 48 or something. So then they were, plus they were too high. He goes, the guy had about 15 times he could have went around. Why didn't he? Nobody seems to know.
Well, okay, so the BS machine has started to spin up in the media on Fox News this morning. There's an article out there that says the NTSB has pulled the data recorders. Duh, it's one, that and the voice recorder, the two things they immediately go do. And they found that the speed brakes, basically the spoilers, if you've ever sat over the wing, when the plane lands, you'll see these huge flaps pop up out of the wing instantly, okay? What those are, those aren't actually brakes. What they do is destroy the lift of the wing on purpose so that the plane sits on its landing gear, and that means that the entire the weight of the plane is on the wheels, therefore the brakes work at their maximum efficiency.
Well, they won't come on if they're not compressed a certain amount.
Well, that's the entire problem.
Yeah.
Is that they said that the reversers and the spoilers were never deployed, and the reason they weren't deployed, if you watch the video, is that he's halfway down the runway and he doesn't have the main landing gear all the way on the ground.
If you looked at it comes down. He's a lot flatter than you normally see a plane come.
Well,
in.
he hits the nose wheel first.
That's
which
what I mean.
Is
yeah.
never supposed to happen either. Okay, but yeah, because he's wildly unstable on approach, which that's an instant go around when you get to that situation. But here's the thing: the impression that is left if you read this article that's out there now is that something went wrong and the plane was didn't stop because the brakes didn't work. That is a complete load of crap. The reason that the spoilers are locked out by the plane's logic, if it's still in the air, is because if they deploy and you're in the air, they'll cause a crash.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay, because they wreck the lift.
Well, all the stuff is designed where the plane has to know it's on the ground before any of this stuff works.
Right. And that means that the wheels have to be on the ground and turning.
Well, I'm a dummy, but I saw a picture of the thing from the side, and I'm like, he's way too flat.
Oh, yeah.
Mr. Flanagan, I don't know if they even do it, but I was playing golf at the Doral long before Trump owned it, and boy, it was hotter than hinges of hell in that place. But the guys are coming in. You ever see a DC-3 land?
Oh, yeah.
Well, you have, but I never had. And the DC-3, instead of the wheels being in the middle, and then when it's all fine, the front nose wheel comes down, and there's the front and the two unders, right? Well, the DC-3 is the other way. There's the two unders, and then there's the one in the back. So there's not a nose wheel. There's a rear wheel. So when it comes to land, I looked at this thing. I'm doing a pitching wedge shot. I look up. Oh my God. The guy's going to crash. It's pointed straight down instead of normally when the regular ones come in, the commercial jets now, it always comes in where the nose is higher and it comes in like an egret or like an eagle would come down, right? Where
well,
the head's up.
It's a flare. Yeah,
yeah. Yeah. But the DC-3 is just the opposite. The thing looks like the guy's going to drive the nose into the ground because he wants the two front wheels or the other wheels to land first. Then when he slows down, it settles back on its behind.
Yeah.
But it's well, watch them come in. You're like, wait a minute! It looks so different.
Well, it's just the design of, there's an awful lot of older planes, especially in the prop world, that are tail draggers.
Did you ever fly one of those?
Very differently on landing.
Did you ever fly one of those?
I've never flown in one, no, but I've seen plenty of them.
Well, I don't know, back in those days, I mean, this was, late 90s, all the planes that, nobody else wanted here were landing there. I think they could land at Kennedy. I mean, you see a 707 come in now, there's none left, but they're so noisy.
Well, the 727, I flew on a ton of times.
Oh, me too. It was back and forth to New York. They were the...
People Express was basically a Greyhound bus that was an aircraft. You paid after they took off.
The guy came down the aisle with a cash register.
Yeah.
He didn't have a ticket. You got on. Who bought them? Because they had a huge terminal.
Well, they went out of business.
Somebody bought the terminal in that whole area.
Went into Newark.
They had a hub in Newark.
Yeah, they went into Newark. They came out of O'Hare. I flew them several times. And it was a bus. You got on the, no assigned seats. You got on the plane. You picked a seat. And then the stew comes down the aisle and takes your money. It was $100, $99, one way, no reservations, no seats. Get out, it's a bus.
Yeah. and the guy came down with a cash register.
Yeah.
And gave you change. If it was $79.95, the guy gave you the nickel.
by the way, in addition to that, they actually had reasonably cheap beverage prices, too. So you could get yourself a beer.
Did you ever ride on I did the shuttle. I was a... When I was, not to go into people's different body styles, but even when I was slender, I always kind of ran hot. I mean, I was never comfortable walking out in the street, down the street with a suit and tie on, but some people were, I just never was, maybe because I was an athlete or something. But we took Bill Flores, who was the vice chairman, and the president of CBOE and the chairman, we all hopped in our suits right from a meeting. We're going from Washington to New York. Of course, Washington is being Washington. It's a solid 98, 85% humidity. We pile in this cab, and fortunately, I'm the tallest, so I get the front seat. And the cab has no air conditioning, and I'm dying. The guys in the back seat, Duke and Chuck, they could care less. I mean, they never even unbuttoned their top button, for God's sake. So yeah. Then we get to the airport. Remember the shuttle? Eastern ran a shuttle?
Yeah.
Well, the shuttle was a 727. They took the kitchen out. They took everything out but the bathrooms. No first class. And you basically piled on. And as soon as it was full, from Washington to New York, the thing would take off. Well, one had just taken off. So we pile in. We get this. And you're supposed to, go to the back seat. So there's the four of us idiots in the back seat. Well, they didn't hook it up to the shore power, whatever the thing is for air conditioning. It's just sitting there. Because it fills up in like a half hour. And then they fire it up, and then the air conditioner and the thing goes. I'm sitting in the back of this thing, and I'm dying. we get to New York. We take another cab to a place we're having dinner. So Bill Flores is another training floor guy. Well, Chuck and Duke go right in and start talking to people. Bill and I find an air conditioning vent. Take our suit coats off. We're just standing under it trying to dry off. He goes, what's with those other two guys? I go, they never even took their coat off. That thing, you got into thing. You never saw a plane look like that. Everything was gone. The kitchens, the bathrooms were still there, but that was it. It was this big cavernous thing. No first class, no nothing. And by the way, as soon as the front seat got filled, the pilot goes, okay, we're going, and off you went.
Well, People Express was basically the same
way. Yeah. Well, this didn't have a schedule. Yeah. But it was whenever enough people wanted to go from Washington to New York, off you went. Okay, then. They had two gates at each spot. Two planes just went back and forth.
Well, like I said, it was a bus.
Yeah. I mean, it was, no security, none of that stuff.
There was security. Oh, yeah, even back then, but it was a metal detector. So it's basically to make sure you didn't have
a gun. There wasn't. No metal detector.
Well, there was in the terminal.
No, there wasn't. I remember going on planes before there was a metal detector.
Boy, I tell you what, after 1970s, when all those, hijacking go to Cuba was the thing, right? That was the deal for quite some time. I went through into airports, and there was a metal detector.
I never, we went, when I got out of school, we would go when I was working for
Pullman. Well, you're young enough that you were before metal detectors. Yeah, yeah. Okay. Yeah. Well, I wasn't.
Get a load of this. We used to when they deregulated the airlines. I mean, they didn't say, we're going to deregulate tomorrow. Of course, you could never do that, right? They started to have these charters. John, you remember this, but they deregulated a little bit. So now you could go on a charter, and you'd go to wherever you were going, but if you paid. But then if you canceled, you didn't get your money back, right? So they had all these charters back and forth to Las Vegas, and I used to love to go to Vegas before I traded. So we would go. We'd go 4 or 5 times a year, but there was a number, 1-800-SODA-POP. I still remember, and you could call and you'd get the cancellations, and they'd say, "Yeah, you want to go?" And so we got $179 to stay at, Westward Ho or some horrible place. Or for like $219, you can stay at, the Flamingo. Or for $229, you can stay at Caesars or something, right? So you'd go out to the airport. It was Thursday to Sunday, Friday to Monday, or Monday to whatever. So the same plane would take a group out and take a group back. So you show up at the airport with your suitcase. You check in. Carl, you're not going to believe this. You check in. You'd go right to the bar. You got on a plane, and if it was real late, maybe you couldn't sit with whoever you were going with, but who cares? Everybody was on vacation. Everybody was fun to talk to. So you'd get on the thing. It was always an old DC-8 or something like that. It was never anything new. Matter of fact, one time we went on a 707. I couldn't believe it. But so you go to Vegas. Everybody's playing, put your name on the five-hour bill, bag of bucks, and everybody's playing cards. An open bar the whole way. They'd actually have a bar. You can hang around the bar in the front of the plane if you wanted. You'd land, you go right from where you were going, right out to the bar or the casino, dinner, and they would bring your luggage to your room for you. And on Sunday morning, they'd come by at 10:30 and pick up your luggage. So of course you hoped you were showered and cleaned up. You'd go right to brunch, hang at the casino, make it to the airport by 3:00. The first time you saw your luggage was a carousel at O'Hare. Yeah. Can you imagine that today? I mean,
God. That's how I live.
It was so much fun. It was so much fun. And, I wonder if one of these days, if the world ever decides to get rational, are we going to get rid of the 150,000 TSM? Are you ever going to get the chance to just walk on the plane again?
Well, no. Look, the entire reason for the TSA is it was created for one reason and one reason only, and that is to prevent somebody from suing an airline or an airport authority who were prior to that responsible for security in the event that something like this ever happened again. That was the entire reason. And oh, by the way, not a single person got on any of those aircraft on 9/11 with a single prohibited item.
Right.
There was nothing wrong with a box cutter in your in your carry-on bag. I used to carry a tool bag because during the late 1980s and early 90s, I was in the air a lot, but specifically between O'Hare and Atlanta at Hartsfield all the time. I was doing contract work down there. I worked for a company that had a contract where they were building stuff, and we were doing integration in Atlanta, actually Norcross, but close enough. And, I was living in Chicago, so that was twice a week, frequently back and forth. And I'd carried on test equipment that was god awful expensive. There was no way in hell I was checking that stuff, all right. And a complete electronic tool bag. Well, you got all kinds of things in there that you could use as potentially a weapon. You got wire cutters. You got the box cutter knife. Ordinary kinds of things, pocket knife. Nobody thought anything of any of that. None of that was prohibited. Absolutely. Now, of course, they looked through it all because it set off the metal detector when it went down the thing. But they look in there. Oh, all right, bye.
Well, the idea always was because there were hijackings.
Yeah.
But the hijacking.
But they thought you wanted to go somewhere. That was the concept.
Well, but also it was. As a matter of fact, the pilots were instructed at the time, and that's what was so screwed up about 9/11.
Why? Because they didn't think anybody was going to use the plane as a bomb.
All right, you flew to Cuba, the two idiots got off, and you flew home. Basically.
Well, they never expected that someone would use the aircraft as a flying weapon, as a bomb.
You usually would take suicide out of the mix.
Right.
Once you put suicide in the mix.
Well, yeah, then
John and I talked you know, we had the attempt on, and well, the guy that shot the executive, and well, it's if anybody's ever read, Jan, you and I talked about this, you know, for a while one day. If you ever read The Day of the Jackal, and there was a made for TV movie that went
De Gaulle, yeah.
But then there was also another movie. I didn't see the second movie, but it probably didn't go word for word from the book. Maybe it did, but the whole idea was, if you're going to plan something like that, it's one thing to walk up to somebody and blow your way through Secret Service and shoot somebody and then shoot yourself. I mean, that's on a scale of 1 to 10. You know, that's maybe a 5. But if you decide you want to do something like that and you want to get out of there, well, now it's a different story. I mean, it's months of planning, and, you know, I'm not saying anybody should do it ever. I mean, I would never recommend that. But the whole idea of the day that he didn't want to get killed, right? he wanted out. Right. So the idea of the planning and the buildings and knowing just the sight lines and where people are going to be. That's why when these assassination attempts, really, well, going back even to, I mean, Kennedy, that guy wanted out. So it's very hard to be a one-person job. That takes months of planning. And if you want to be like, who's the idiot that went up and shot Reagan? He just went up and shot him.
Oh, heck, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, there was no planning there other than I'm a lunatic. I mean, it's lunatics are hard to plan for, you know, for...
Right. Oh, yeah, yeah, absolutely.
I mean, but, somebody who doesn't care about themselves, well, that's, you know, that's why, you know, once in a while on the show we have Dr. Mark on, talk about, you know, he thinks there's a lot of people that are just around like that, hanging around in basements and doing hate stuff all day long. They don't have a job. They never talk to people. I mean, have we ever had stuff like that? Well, we probably have, but in those days you had to go somewhere by stagecoach probably. I mean, now it's those people are way more dangerous than they ever have been, doesn't it seem?
Well... Yeah, I mean, it's the insanity is very, very difficult, if not impossible, to completely protect against.
But if you're insane on a farm in Ohio in 1890, who cares?
Nobody cares.
Yeah.
Right. Well, that's exactly. But yeah, I mean, that's part of the problem is that nut jobs, single lone nut jobs are one thing. This, you know, 9/11 was a different thing because that was a very well planned. And by the way, scouted in advance.
But you had to find 20 people willing to die. How do you do that?
Well, that's right. But here's the other side of that too, Chief, and that is for all the people that have been absolutely convinced that, you know, this is imminent, that a nuclear bomb is going to be, you know, smuggled. I mean, this has been the argument for a lot of things. My pushback on all this, because right after this happened, the fact that you found 20 guys willing to do it, right? Strongly implied that
they weren't idiots. They weren't like, you know, guys you dragged out of solitary confinement.
But the point is that you were able to find 20 people willing to do that. Strongly implied that there was more than 20 in the world. Right?
Oh yeah, yeah.
Okay. So my initial implication on this was, hey, wait a minute. This is a serious. This is way more serious than we think, because actually constructing something that will go boom is not very hard. All right, when it comes to really bad things that can go boom. The trick is doing it without killing yourself in the process. And oh, by the way, if you don't care,
yeah.
All right, so that's a problem. So
saying you don't care and actually doing it to yourself, there's got to be a big gulf there.
Well, there's, yeah, it, but the fact that it had just happened led me to have the reasonable expectation that, hey, we've got ourselves a problem here from a standpoint of religious nut jobs who are willing to do something like this. But then, as time went on, I'm like, well, where's the boom?
Yeah.
Okay, so maybe this isn't quite as prevalent as, you know, as the first evidence would suggest.
You don't always think about this. Why would anybody think about it? But if you're going to recruit somebody like that, why you would ever want to, I don't know. But, John, I think you and I might start in homes where people have incredible cancer or something and going to die in a week anyway or something. You wouldn't expect to find 30-year-old people of serious health and families and reasons to live for. You wouldn't think that's where we would start our recruiting, but we would be wrong, eh?
Well, I
remember that movie, The Parallax View?
Yeah.
Warren Beatty and Hume Cronin and Paul Prentice. It's a riff on the Kennedy assassination, but they have that the assassinations, you know, are us recruiting organization that Warren Beatty is trying to, you know, do a sting operation on. And they're trying to figure out how they can get selected to be one of these, you know, assassins in training. So they give the multiple choice quiz that they've also gotten a copy of to this monkey in some lab. They get the monkey to, like, play around with the questionnaire. They send it in under Warren Beatty's name, and he gets picked. You know, so maybe it's not as sophisticated in recruiting as we might think it should be. But
you know, the one that always... another one we talked earlier in the show about not running legal things to ground. I often wondered, to my dying day, I wonder what was the real story behind Oklahoma City. Because there were a lot of people involved, and that never got run to ground. You can't tell me those two idiots did that by themselves.
Well, actually you can tell me that those... What was actually done there is not even slightly difficult, which is...
I didn't say it was difficult. I'm saying it's a certain amount of... It's hard to imagine that those are the only two guys that any involved in it. I mean, it...
Oh, that is quite possibly not the case. Yeah, I mean, it's... But the...
And we couldn't wait to kill a guy, so we never told a story.
Well, right. But the reality of making that particular kind of explosive is actually very easy. You know, that was discovered by accident in Galveston.
I wouldn't even know how to drive a concrete truck, for God's sake. I mean, let alone load the thing up with stuff. And that thing must have stunk and leaked all up for how long?
Well, I don't know. But, I mean, it's, you know, like I said, that ammonium nitrate and diesel are bad news is something that was discovered by accident in Galveston. And that was is it Galveston or Texas City? It might have been Texas.
Oh, Texas City. Yeah, that's a horrible explosion.
The city basically got leveled. The docks.
Really?
It was a cargo ship. It caught on fire. They had a fuel leak. It caught on fire. They caught on fire. It was at the dock. The firemen thought, okay, you know, go put the fire out, right? Well, they didn't realize that the correct thing to do in that situation is run. And they found out the hard way. The ship blew up and basically leveled the dock and everything around. I mean, it is probably the largest industrial blast kind of accident that's ever happened. So, but they had absolutely no idea that was likely to occur. I mean, they do now, but yeah.
Well, I want to lob one at Chad, because he listens on the show a lot of times more than he talks, because a lot of the stuff we're talking about is, you know, market generating.
Yeah.
I don't know, Chad, if you heard me do a little rant with Carl on Friday, sorry about that, Carl, but I was ranting a little bit regarding, you know, you end up, all kinds of little things don't necessarily, or a little thing doesn't really affect the market. Even sometimes big things don't affect the market, but it seems like we're getting a lot of little things that are hitting. And in my experience, when that starts to happen, you have to be more nervous. I mean, we've got inflation numbers. We've got the amount of people that can't seem to afford what they're doing is legendary right now. You've got the stuff Larissa talks about, that the numbers, you listen to people on TV, even if you look at retail sales and you say, well, they're up. Well, of course, if they're up 3% and your inflation's 5%, But you never kind of get that story from anybody. It seems like, you know, I don't know that the major networks are up Trump's ass or not. I think it's not really news, it's ratings, which is a lot different. I mean, it's not like everybody gives you, the three networks give their guys an hour a day to do the news. And I'm not saying that was 100% news, but it probably was 90%. If you listen to CNBC, they're concerned about their next guest. And you know, even the thing with Maria Bartiromo, that was bizarre last week.
Well, they're also very concerned about anything that impacts their narrative, okay, whatever that is. I mean, I'm blackballed on their network along with the rest, and it was because I went after the bankers and the fraud during the crash. And I was invited all time on all of these shows. And
I could see why they stopped that.
Well, yeah, that, you know, they didn't like me pointing out that, oh, by the way, these guys on these trading desks are selling this stuff to pension funds and insurance companies and, you know, things like this, all this securitized stuff. And yet in their internal conversations and email, they're calling them vomit. And I'm saying, excuse me, the last time I looked at that, that has a word in the law. It's called fraud.
Well,
okay.
Yeah.
Okay. And but oh boy, you don't say, you know, whoa, and you know, my question was the same as it always is. Where the hell are the handcuffs?
Well, and Carol, you should wear your blackballing like a badge of honor.
Well, I do, but you know what? It's even good. Well, I don't know about right now, but a couple of years ago, there was one of the producers that tried to book me, and I still know people that work for Fox, and they contacted me and said, oh, by the way, you're still on the list because these guys tried to book you and were told by management they can't.
Well, I mean, it's a good thing to be blackballed for life and not just a week or two.
Well, apparently it is. Apparently once you get on that list, you can't get off it.
Right.
So unlike there was a bar in... John, you were never a Samaries creature with us, but there was a bar in Indiana that had the big antenna so you could pick up the Chicago sports.
Oh, yeah.
And but of course it was black and white and fuzzy, so I'd always shoot down there with either Bill Hake or Tom Conway, call him hippie, but and we're sitting there watching the Winter Olympics one night, and it's just us and the bartender. How the guy made any money? It must have been a front for something. A pitcher of Drury's is $1.35, Carl, and the best meatball sandwich you ever ate was 59 cents.
Yeah, well.
So we're sitting there watching the Olympics. So Hippie goes, hey, this girl on there, she's 21 or something. So, and she's hot. She just won some ski race. He goes, imagine, she's only like 2 years older than me. So the bartender goes, hey, what the hell? You're not 21? He goes, But in Indiana, you know, you had to be 21 to be in the bar, but then there was a room next to it. It was like the restaurant. Well, you gotta go next door and finish in the other room and finish your beer like if I was 21, which I wasn't. But so 2 weeks later, we're back at the bar, and I'm thinking that was the quickest 2 years. so he was blackballed for 2 years, but it really was 2 weeks. But yours is a lifetime ban, right?
Apparently, it's a lifetime. Well, you know, I mean, of course, they never tell you that, right? All you find out is that you're not being, you know, done. Yeah.
I was never asked back on CNBC when I was on one morning, and it was Joe Kernan, and of course, Audrey said I looked terrible, so I guess it's better than. The room I was in, you couldn't tell where the camera was. It was just black. There was no monitor.
Right.
So if you didn't know the guy's voice, you didn't know who the hell you were talking to. But I happened to know, you know, listen to the guy. I knew it was Kernan's voice. But I'm looking for the camera, and I couldn't find it. And Rod goes, God, you look like Tricky Dick Nixon, your eyes shooting back and forth. What's the matter?
I'm trying to figure out where the hell the camera is.
I was trying to figure out where the camera was. She goes, well, you look like Tricky Dick.
Well, you know, one of the things that's interesting is that at the time, I lived down in Northwest Florida, right? So the PBS station was where they used to do the hits from because they had an uplink there. And all of this was still in the time when you actually did those uplinks through satellites. So as a result, there's about a 2 or 3 second period between when the video and audio actually goes up and then comes back, right? So in order for you to be able to know what's going on, you've got a backfeed that's on a terrestrial phone line for the audio, so that bug in your ear is synchronized with the person you're talking to. Otherwise, you'd have absolutely no way you could do this. It would just be impossible. All right. So that was there, and that was fantastic. But I always told them I wanted the video backfeed because you're staring into the camera, and it's got a screen, like if you have a teleprompter or whatever, that you can read.
This room didn't have anything like that. It was a black room.
Well, it's all blacked out, but it's got the lighting, you know, but it's anachronic, you know, sound tiles on it and everything, so you don't get echoes and all of this. It's a formal studio, but I always told them I wanted the video backfeed, and the guys, the first couple times I went in there, they looked at me like I had six heads, because it's going to be substantially off synchronization. And they're like, that's going to totally screw you up. I said, no, you don't understand. I've been doing this for 15 years. I used to be on Chicago Tonight all the time with the PBS station there. I'm used to this. I need to see it because I need to be able to, even though I'm several seconds out of synchronization, synchronization-wise, I'm working off the bug in the ear.
So you were a problem right out of the gate.
But I was, oh yeah, I was, yeah. After the first couple times I'm in there, they knew, you know, who I was, because it's always the same guys, right? Yeah. They're doing the tech side. And so they're like, oh yeah, that guy again. And so, you know, then there was no problem after that. But yeah, the first couple times I'm in there, I told them I wanted this, and they looked at me like nobody wants that. I said, look, just give it to me.
Well, I was there allegedly to talk about Walmart earnings, right? And there's four other people. Plus, I don't really give a, other than if I have a earnings play on for my clients. Yeah. I mean, you know, there's Walmart earnings. What am I supposed to do about it? So it just so happens how long ago this was. Evidently, well, that was the day that Warren Buffett bought the Burlington Northern.
Oh, okay, yeah.
So yeah. Joe Kernan says something about the other three guys were already off, and he goes, hey, Tom, you know anything about this Warren Buffett buying the Burlington Northern? And I said, well, gee, Joe, you kind of went into my wheelhouse. I said,
Since you asked the question.
I said, well, the Burlington Northern is a combination of the Northern Pacific, the Great Northern, Chicago, Burlington, and Quincy, and I forget the name of the fourth. It's essentially a monopoly of all the Northern railroads.
Right.
And Warren Buffett realizes that there's oil has been discovered up there and there's no pipelines. So he essentially has a monopoly on essentially all the oil that's coming out of that area, unless you're going to truck it out, which you're probably not going to. I just called Warren Buffett a monopolist, and it went over like a stink bomb in church. And all of a sudden, well, Tom, thank you very much.
Oh yeah, you never got called again.
Oh, I never got called back. But I didn't say anything. I didn't say anything bad. I just said who the Burlington Northern was, which of course they never said, which you should say. By the way, who exactly is the Burlington Northern?
Why would he want them? Right.
Yeah, but I'm saying why wouldn't you say it was a combination of all the Northern railroads? They'd leave all that stuff out for whatever reason.
Chief, they do the same thing. You know, when all this was going on, I pointed out, I said, look, if you think this is a singular thing, you've got all this game playing that's going on. There was a large-scale investigation at the time of systematic monopolist-controlled appraisal fraud, which was a large part of what drove the housing bubble, because if you are taking a loan on something, it doesn't appraise, the deal isn't going to go, all right? So these guys, there was a huge write-up on this. There was a study done on it. Some people started digging into, hey, what's going on? Why is it that all of a sudden this house is appraising at, you know, 100 grand more than it did 6 months ago, right? Because these things are flipping back and forth and back and forth. You're like, what the F is going on here? Well, as it turns out, what they found was that a number of these lenders, including places like Countrywide, had their list and their recommendation levels and who they were, you know, who they tried to steer this stuff to. Now that you're not supposed to do.
We got a few minutes before Audrey comes in, but
not supposed to do that crap at all, Chief.
Jen, this was what you did a lot from. Now, from what I understand, when you look at, Audrey does this all the time. You look at appraisals, but when the prices are going up, okay, you're probably, this is the legitimate world if there is such a thing. If all the houses in this area are 400, all right, and they just are, and all of a sudden somebody buys one, and he pays, you know, 440, well, it's probably not going to appraise out. But if a guy like Carl opens up, you know, the Carl wallet, and actually pays 450 cash for one,
right,
and then Kevin buys another one for 450 cash, well, now the last three,
you got some good comparables right there.
Then you got the comparables at 450, right?
Right.
So there is a way where you know in your heart of hearts that the 1,000 homes that are there, they can't all go for 450 because nobody's got 450 except the two guys that just bought the place. I mean, how does that, even if it's legit, when I say legit, two people actually paid 450,
right,
how do you stop the appraisals from all of a sudden going up 50 grand in 2 weeks?
Well, 2007 showed how crooked the appraisal business could become and had become.
Right. Well, that was the point.
But I'm saying if it's legit, it's legit. I guess my question
is... Well, but that's legit, Chief, but that's not what was happening.
I understand that. I get it. But I'm saying, but now all of a sudden, everybody appraises out at 450. How many does it take, John, for it to run up like that? I guess is my question.
Well, I mean, but the flip side is the real problem. If you have distressed sales, even a couple of them, where it's, you know, it's a short sale or it's in foreclosure and it goes to sheriff's team, and right. you know, it's a $150,000 sale. That's also a comparable. So that's going to really? Drag down. Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Okay. Well, that's a rain on the parade.
Well, I'll say.
Well, the truth is the truth. Yeah.
We showed, me, you know, being the lottery, had to show some houses on Monday, so of course I drive around and I do stuff like call Flanagan and talk to him while I'm waiting in the car. The good thing I don't have your phone number, Carol, right? I have you in that loop. You wouldn't want to be in it. So, but I mean, these are, a couple of them were fixer-uppers, flippers. Audrey goes, the guy, they did such a horrible job, you'd have to do over whatever they just did.
Oh, there were a couple places I looked at here that had, you know, that had been quote-unquote renovated, right? And I walk in there, I look around. Now, I'm not a contractor, right? I just happen to be a guy that's pretty handy. I can, you know, do damn near anything. And I look around, I'm like, the agent's like, well, what do you think of this? And I said, I see $50,000 worth of, I got to do it nows.
Yeah.
And he's like, what are you talking about? I said, well, this is wrong. This is wrong. This has got to be torn out.
You can see all the tape. You got to retape the place.
Yeah, I'm like, yeah. I got $50,000 worth of work here. I said, now, you know, do I like the location? Do I like the layout? Yeah, I like all those things. I said, but if I'm going to write an offer on this thing, I'm a solid 50 under their ask.
All right, Kyle, before we let you go, S&P futures are down 33, NASDAQ futures down 185. The new line in the sand in the 10-year, it was 4.5 until we went through 4.5, and nobody worried about it. Well, then it became 4.8. As of right now, we're 4.812. Are we reaching dangerous ground here or no?
Well, yeah. The real thing, though, is that at the same time you're seeing it go up there, what you're not seeing is an expansion of the spread. So the entire curve is lifting, because I track this IRX and TNX differential.
IRX is what, 90 day, 6 months?
IRX is 13 week bill.
All right.
So that one's quoted on a continuous basis, as is the TNX. The other ones, you have to, you know, if you have a Bloomberg terminal,
TYX is right there. TYX is 30.
Well, TYX is 30. Yeah. But the TNX is more important from a standpoint of mortgages and things like that. So the TYX is a lot thinner in terms of market liquidity.
It used to be the thing, but now it's the 10-year.
Well, but now it's not. Now it's the 10-year, right? So those are the two things that I pay the most attention to. And that what's happening is that it's lifting on both ends, which is a very strong indication that this is not coming from the Fed. This is not coming from Treasury playing games. This is the market telling you that rates are, that indeed what I've been talking about, the market environment has turned. And it doesn't matter what they like about that. This is the world we're in today. You need to be able to survive and thrive in that world.
Well, everybody, that's what kind of started the show, saying in this world people are convinced that the Fed drives the market into interest rates, but in a sense they do, because they manage the money supply. But if they let the money supply get out of control, they can't turn around and then control the interest rates, because it's out of control. They can bring it back under control, Volcker. You can bring it back under control, but that's a big problem. And this guy, you know, we're going to poke it a break here and have Audrey on, but, you know, it's the old joke, you two guys are mavens. If I ask you, there's four birds sitting on a limb and three birds decide to fly away, how many are left on the limb?
Yeah, well.
Four.
Because they haven't done anything yet. And that's what that's my problem. I actually really kind of like this Warsh guy, but given his history and the history of the people that put him there, why did he take the job? They're absolutely diametrically opposed.
Well, here's the other thing, too. Everyone thinks Bessent's some kind of genius. Bessent blew up two of Soros' funds.
I don't think that guy's... He's...
Well, I'm just saying, people that think he's one of the smartest men in the world, well, then how come he's blown up twice?
My brother says he reminds him of the guy in The Man Who Shot Liberty Valance that always laughed at Liberty's jokes.
Yeah, well, he also reminds me of P.T. Barnum, so...
Yeah. Anyway, Carl, thank you very much for piling in. We'll talk to you on Friday. It's already Wednesday. We'll talk to you again on Friday. We got
Friday.
CPI Friday, so you got labor 1 week and CPI the next. So
we're going to have fun.
Hey, you know, stupid question. Why some months the CPI comes out before, most months comes out before the PPI, and once in a while it doesn't. Is there some method to that madness, or do they just do it to trick me?
It's just when the collection, the collection window. It's kind of like the same thing with the jobs report, in that the jobs data, the sample week is the third week of the month. But of course, how that aligns with the first Friday is not a fixed relationship, okay. Right?
Well, we're going to go to a very quick break here, and we'll come back. We'll have Audrey. John, you,
have
and Audrey,
good one, Carl.
John, you and Audrey can talk real estate, and I'll try and shut up, which is hard for me to do. S&P futures down 30, NASDAQ futures down 173. Be right back, Stocks and Jacks.
Listen, are you a 50-year-old person looking for term life insurance? Then you need to talk to Bob. Bob specializes in helping people find $1 million or more of term life insurance for a couple of $100 a month. Look, you need to know there's a price war in the term life insurance business, and you may be paying too much. Call Bob, and he'll shop and see how much money he can save you. Look, this could be the last term life insurance policy you ever have. Your rates are guaranteed for the next 20 years. That's right, guaranteed level rates for the next 20 years. And if you're a smoker or your health is not perfect, Bob has great rates for you too. So for $1 million of term life insurance coverage for a couple of $100 a month, call Bob right now. 800-989-1415. 800-989-1415. 800-989-1415. That's 800-989-1415. Paid for by Term Direct.
Stocks, jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here. Right now. Right here. Right now. Right now.
Hello, welcome back to Stocks and Jocks. Quick break. S&P futures up down 27. NASDAQ futures down 163. This is after a crummy day yesterday. We were down, let's see, what were we yesterday? We were down, Dow was down 628, you know, but that's only a few stocks. S&P was down 45, NASDAQ was down 85. So today, NASDAQ's kind of catching up to the downside, which is not exactly what you want. Over in Europe, the DAX down 435, that's 1.7%. Ouch, these guys were all like flat yesterday, but not today. FTSE down 127, 1.2%. CAC around down 162, that's 2%. So they're not happy over in Europe here. Asia, Nikkei down 126, call that one pretty flat, 2.2%. Hang Seng down 42.2%, Shanghai up 10.2%. So not much in the way of this is all, well, here's the number. Oil is, Brent is $100.73, so it cracked $100 a barrel. West Texas Intermediate, our stuff, up 269.95.72, so none of that is good. Bonds, 10-year 4.8, well, I've got, the current one is 4.808, so it's over 4.8, but not by very much. Japan, 2.899. So that's not the number you want there, because those guys, like I say, they're more hot than we are. Gold up $1.90, $44.40. Not much going on there. Silver down 22 cents, 66.78. There's all kinds of stories about countries in Europe are unloading their gold that they had in the New York Fed, and taking it back to London because they don't think the U.S. is trustworthy anymore. Well, we are or we aren't, I don't know. They don't seem to think so. Foreign exchange, the euro is 116.5, which is kind of where it was. The yen is 153.35. This is after intervention and after... But this is down from 163, like 6 weeks ago. That is a massive move in the currency. That is not healthy. A British pound, 135.5. Crypto, up $1,000, 79.487. We're running towards stuff like that because the dollar is down a little bit. Andrew, what do you got for us, Trevi Weather Sports? Cubs lose, Sox lose, yeah.
Yep, that's exactly what I was going to say. It is 7:38 here in Chicago, September 9th. Yep, none of it losses here. Cubs lose, Sox lose, and the Diamondbacks lost as well. Chicago weather, probably not looking much better today. It's currently 73, so at least a little bit cooler. We're going to have a high of 82, but we are going to have light showers and a possible thunderstorm here and there throughout the day. Over in Phoenix, they're also in a little bit of a mess right now. They're currently at 91 degrees. They have a heat warning as the high is going to hit 107. They are going to have a mix of sun, clouds, and also a possible thunderstorm in the afternoon. And finally, for Chicago traffic, things are looking a lot more in the red than I am used to seeing on Wednesdays here today. No in major accidents to report. We got inbound Kennedy from Montrose, it's going to take you 35 minutes. Inbound Eden from Lake Cook is going to take you 64 minutes. Inbound Eisenhower from Wolf is going to take you 55. Inbound Dan Ryan from 95th is going to take you 39 minutes. And the Stevenson from I-294 is going to take you 46 minutes. Back to you, Chief.
We have Audrey. We can't hear her, but she sounds like she might be here. Well, you got to turn it up somehow.
It is turned up.
There you go.
Can you hear me?
Now you're good. Now you're good.
All
right. So how are you?
I'm okay, but it's a little early to tell. Just had my second cup of coffee, so we'll see how the day unfolds.
So your the standard response, I'm doing fine, but it's early yet.
That's right.
So what's going on in your world? And John can talk to you about that. Well, I've been quizzing with Carl here about God knows what, but all kinds of good stuff. So what's going on in the real estate world? I talked to my cousin's also in the real estate world with Odd, and he said he's doing kind of the same thing. A lot of cash. The trades are kind of cash, not the usual stuff that you would see. Although you do have a couple of second time buyers. You've got some younger couples that I actually saw you with on Monday. So it's not all cash deal, but it's a lot of it is, eh?
Well, you know, it's like the older people have cash; they've been in their house forever, or the people who've been in the market for the last 10, 15 years, they've got cash, a lot of them. But you know, not everybody has that. So you have a lot of first time move up buyers. So people are still out there. A lot of time, it's necessity; they have to move, and if you have to move, you have to move. So it's just the way of the world. So it's going to generate a part of the market, you know, for clients. But, you know, my clients, my current repeat clients are just growing. They literally are growing out of their house, and they have to move. There is no room. She bought the house. She was a single person, and a few years later now, they've got two kids and the dog and the cat and the husband, and there is no room.
I say so, kick the husband out. I say,
oh well,
maybe you keep him around. So you don't.
Well, that's a happy thing. So they're kind of excited, yeah. and they're ready to look, and they've had the house long enough that they're going to make a nice profit on it. So it'll be a good down payment on their next house.
But what are you seeing up in your area, Jen?
Well, there's a fair amount of stuff for sale. Just, you know, not as much probably as there was two or three months ago, just when I walk around and take a look at stuff. There's some rehabbing going on, which is always good to see. Places that are getting spruced up or enlarged, or they're going up, adding a floor above or something. So those are positive signs. There's also, I can't quantify this, but there's a lot of places that, for some reason or another, are not on the market, but they're vacant. You know, they're not up for sale. I don't know who's living in them anymore or why somebody isn't selling them. And I'm wondering if there's some kind of, you know, movement of people who are, you know, locked in by capital gains threats. They don't want to unload a property they've had for a long time. It's worth a lot more than what they paid for it. And they're living somewhere else, or they're vacationing or something, and they haven't figured out how they're going to deal with the house back home when they return. So I don't know. It's on paper, I guess it's kind of a healthy market around here. And the prices are inching up too, but you know, that's also affecting the ability of people to qualify for a house. People really need it, and you know, are getting ever farther away from having a house, it seems. So maybe we're kind of a typical Chicago neighborhood these days, doing pretty well, I think. But not like the suburbs, certainly. It's way behind that.
To your point, Chad, I think that you know, you're seeing probably several things. You may be seeing an estate house waiting until probate is settled. You may be seeing the person who has a second home, somebody sitting with the 3% mortgage that would just as soon sit with it, or no mortgage at all.
Right.
Until they decide what they're doing. So especially in more affluent areas, people are at their have been at their beach house, their lake house for the summer, and maybe even haven't come back yet, and they're getting ready to go to their winter condo. So, you know, for a lot of reasons, I don't see a lot of houses empty as far as like a foreclosure or anything like that going on. I actually know a couple that are just sitting because of estates and waiting for the paperwork to get done. So somebody's just cutting the grass and, you know, keeping the nightlight on, but there's nobody in there.
Or not cutting the grass. We saw a few of those.
Well, you have to cut the grass because they'll come over and find you. And I know a couple of the suburbs here, the first fine is like for a small suburban lot is like $300.
Really?
So you better cut your grass.
Well,
once it gets over six inches, they will come over and find you.
We don't want to wander into this kind of cesspool, but it seems to me, and I anecdotally, this is nothing I can prove, a lot of people are dying. Now, whether it's COVID, you know, whatever the story is, because then I have a couple.
I think you're just noticing it because you're getting older.
Well, I mean, the guy who works in my building and who's actually doing some work in Audrey's place was telling me last week, and he's very religious. He's the priest. He's telling me he's never buried as many young people as he has in the last 2 years. Anyway, where I'm going with this is not, you know, I'm not going to give a medical report, but a couple of guys that, you know, rent space in our building here are attorneys, and they're doing some stuff with estates and probate. The courts are jammed. I mean, you can't even to get somebody to you know, be an executor named. It's a while. I mean, for some reason, and I, you know, I'm not.
Well, the reason is laziness and inefficiency. And are the courts even back in COVID, or are they still doing Zoom meetings?
Well, I'm just saying that whatever it is, it seems like the probate courts are pretty bad now. Whether that's an increase in the amount of cases, meaning an increase in the amount of deaths, or an increase in the amount of, you know, stuff that's being, you know, fought about. Whatever it is, it seems like that. It wouldn't surprise me that John sees a bunch of places that are caught up in an estate. I guess is the bottom line on my dance here. But it wouldn't surprise me that there's a lot of stuff sitting vacant for 6 months because they can't get into the probate.
And you know, such a simple process to get into. But all that came to a halt during COVID. Nobody was working.
Well, it's not a simple process of somebody.
And I don't think anybody's even caught up with the backlog. I mean, when you buy a house, you're still from Cook County not getting your getting filed for 6 months, maybe.
Yeah. Well, but I mean, I'm talking about it. All it takes is one person in a group to protest the estate, and the thing lasts forever. Then, right?
Yeah, if you have to have some unruly heirs, you know, having disagreements, there is something to that, Tom. I mean, I hear, again, anecdotally, and just reading the newspaper and following news blasts, you know, on various, you know, hyped up websites or, you know, portals for email and stuff. But I'm struck by how many people are, you know, cashing in their chips in their 20s or 30s or younger. And I was always wanted to read the obituary page, just like my parents. That's the first thing they used to read the paper to see.
Use it as a personals column.
Yeah, but I've noticed, and you're right, Audrey. I mean, I pay more attention to this now, and I compare people's ages to my own, and think how I compare to people in my family who came before me and didn't live as long, and I thought they were pretty old, you know, when I knew them. And that's kind of a, you know, rude awakening. But I do notice an uptick in people without any previous, you know, illness history that you know, people seem to have been aware of, and just strange things happening to them at a very, very young age. So,
well, I think a lot of it's coming, you know, all that COVID shot that everybody had to have is, I believe, coming home to roost in a lot of people, and you're going to see it play out, I think, more and more in different types of.
Yeah.
You know, cancers are coming out, and there could be a lot of issues going back to these drug companies.
Well,
that's my suspicion too. And you can't. I mean, you can quantify excess deaths pretty. I mean, there is data. Some of it's not very current, but that's still a third rail issue for a lot of people, where you can't go there without setting off hysteria. Maybe there's good reason why people don't want to talk about it, because it implicates themselves and so many other people. Because, you know,
it also kind of makes you afraid if you took 12 shots.
Right.
Right?
Yeah.
It's the last thing you want to hear about.
You should never be afraid of the shots that were researched correctly, but, you know, the American people, worldwide, they were just one big experiment ball.
What
and a lot of people got rich off of it, and unfortunately, a lot of people are probably going to die.
Well, we've got we've had a little bit of report on the retail stuff, and you know, we've got the real big buildings downtown, John, are still getting foreclosed. And what about the people in the middle? What about the we drive around in Orland, where Audrey is, you see people constructing still small office kind of spaces. You see there's vacancies in strip malls. I mean, who's doing well and who's not here?
Well, if you have a business or you want to open a business, you know, there's so many reasons why you wouldn't do it anywhere near downtown Chicago and would do it in a host of other places. To go into a strip mall, even if you're in it from the beginning, in the construction phase, you've got a much safer situation and a better landing pad if things start to go south, being in a smaller place rather than a bigger place. The scary thing now is that I see in downtown Chicago is it used to be that, you know, the newer buildings, the ones that were, you know, state-of-the-art, 2000, 2005, that lost their tenants, could still do pretty well out of a distressed sale compared to the buildings that are 100 years old and need lots of updates and don't have the attractions that a newer place has. But the newer buildings are doing just as badly now when it comes to, you know, bailouts or finding a buyer, which makes me think that if they're having trouble, the older buildings are having much worse trouble. They're not able to attract tenants or businesses, and you can see that just walking up and down State Street these days. So there's no storefront businesses anymore at all. And that was, if any street had it, it was State Street, but not anymore. So why wouldn't you go to a strip mall, even on the northwest side or someplace where your rent's going to be more reasonable? You don't have to deal with the headaches of finding workers or staff who have to drive downtown and pay parking rates and everything else. And, you know, you've got a lease that you got a lot more control over if it's a small operation rather than a behemoth office building that, you know, doesn't see you the same way. And you got to look at what kind of bang you get for your buck. You go to a smaller place and have parking like the strip mall does that people don't have to pay for. I mean, all of those are very attractive things given what downtown has turned into, which is full of discouragements, you know. Just,
well, the idea that you can get down here for for $2 used to be a massive plus. Correct. Now it's not. Yeah. Although I'll tell you what, in our building here, they just rented a floor. These people used to be over on Harrison in the building. They all got booted out because they're going to turn the place into apartments.
Yeah.
So like I said, these guys have probably picked up two floors worth of people because they're getting booted out of a building. Still a lot of room, but not as. I mean, the building we're in is doing somewhat better than some of the rest of the places. But it's kind of scary when the West Loop seems to be still doing okay, and they're building places over there, which I don't get.
Yeah, I don't either. I really don't.
I mean, what would you rather do? Hop on the L for 50 cents for $2, or we have to come down and drive downtown? I mean, I do because I'm there at this hour in the morning. But by and large. Why, if I started at 8:30, why the hell would I want to drive?
You know, this was something that I wasn't like studying, but I was looking for a friend about housing prices around Tri-Taylor, you know, like Halsted and Roosevelt Road, kind of out that way. But there's been lots of construction, you know, almost gated communities with, you know, single family homes.
Well, you've got the university right there.
Yeah, I mean, and the expressways right there. I mean, just. So somebody was interested in some place, you know, and they wanted to know if I could look up what the sales history of it was and find out, you know, what housing values were like there. So I looked at this property, and I think it was listed for $1.2 million. So I went back through the recorder's records, you know, to find out what its sales history was, and it was built, I think, in 2003 or 2004 and sold for $1.1 million. And I looked at it again and again, and then I started looking at the adjoining properties, you know, to see what the, I mean, those people just, you know, even leave inflation out of the picture, they didn't make any money.
Oh, probably not.
Years.
Yeah.
The house is selling for the same price 22 years later in that part of the city.
They were a little too early paying that much.
Yeah. Something's up here, and I don't know if
that's really kind of shocking.
That's a danger sign. I mean, there's something seriously wrong. I don't, and maybe it's in the type of construction or crime or something that you can't find just looking at sales prices. There's other things that are pulling these properties down.
Could be something simple. They just pay too much.
Yeah, or they exactly. And this is something, if you're, you know, you could do a lot better than that in some more beat up neighborhoods, you know, elsewhere in the city, and not really lose your shirt like that. So I'm kind of surprised that something that has so much going for it.
It's like the canary in the coal mine kind of thing.
Yes, yes.
Exactly. Well, but there's been places, you know, you heard all this stuff when you were in a pit with 350 other people. There were guys, one of the guys, his first name Larry, he's the guy who ended up buying your uncle's house. But the place he was before, he paid up in this little, you know, community. That time he paid up like $450, and across the road they managed to take some cornfield down and build a bunch of places like $375. He was there 10 years and sold it for $450. I mean, it's happened. I mean, if you overpay and all of a sudden, I mean, it hasn't happened that much in the last 10 years because we had nothing but inflation. But it's not like it's never happened, right? That you were in a house and sold it for the same price,
right? Especially a luxury home, you know, by the prevailing standards. So.
Well, Frank Tampas, how much? What kind of hit did he take out of his place?
Well, I would say, but to Jen's point, something else is driving that difference.
Yeah.
And I think what was very interesting is the exodus out of Illinois. Indiana has gotten so many people. And what's interesting is before, it was just the border flight going to like St. John's, the Munster, the Crown Point. Now the affluent crowd is running. The beachfront communities, lake communities were always expensive, but they have more than doubled in several places in the last 2 to 3 years. So people are moving and not coming back. I talked to a few recently, and they're done in Chicago. They've liquidated, and they've put all the money out here in incredible homes. But the ones who were here a couple of years ago have already realized almost 100% return.
Well, for some reason, Indiana and Michigan is grabbing. I think a lot of it has to do with the expressway system. They're grabbing the.
No, these people aren't coming back.
I know,
they're
but in general. It's a lot easier to have a summer home in Michigan City than it is in Lake Geneva, especially if you don't live on the windward
side. Yeah.
I mean, it's impossible to get back and forth there. I mean, people used to try and go to places like Galena for the weekend, but, you know, it's turned into a 3-hour drive.
But you know what? That's not as true, because if you, I watch, because I'm always looking at real estate, and your Pleasant Prairie, your Kenosha, your Racine, Sheboygan, Port Washington, all the way up the coast there to Manitowoc and Two Rivers, the prices there have jumped exponentially.
Well, those are people that are moving there. You're not doing that for the weekend, for God's sake.
No, but that's what I said. It's an exodus and a lifestyle shift, and people are taking their businesses with them, opening them in different places, retiring there, working from home there. The change in the pricing in certain communities is amazing to me in the last, I would say, 3 years.
Well, a lot of people who went to Florida between the heat and the hurricanes and stuff, a lot of them, those people are looking for another spot.
Yeah, but that's different. Yeah, that's a different crowd. It's almost like the second home crowd. These are people who have made a decision to change completely.
Yeah, well,
it's very interesting.
Well, the Chicago development over the next 20, 30 years will be, or non-development, is going to be interesting. It's all about jobs. I mean, like Dr. Mark was talking about him. He's back in New York this week, by the way, or else he was going to be on today, helping a lot of people out that have gotten laid off. You know, they have all these psychological issues, and he says, boy, if you get laid off in New York and your rent's $10,000 a month, you don't have much time to find another job. I mean, the pressure on you. I mean, what is that going to do to New York real estate? I mean, it just seems like it's impervious to ever going down, but I'm not so sure it is. I mean, nothing's impervious if you lose enough people. The, I mean, Chicago. I mean, if you lose, what if you just built one of these shacks in my neighborhood for a couple million bucks and you lose your job? Then what do you do? I mean, it's not like you got months to find a new one. I mean, it's a lot of turmoil every place. And then you got these. How many? The CBOE building, Jen, is now going to be, the old CBOE building is going to be one of these data centers. How many people work in a data center? Do you have any idea? I don't.
I mean, no, I mean, and just as far as, and of course, power consumption and everything else. I mean, it's got some advantages if you want to have a data center. That's the old Midwest Stock Exchange building, right?
Is that the one? Well, no, it's a CBOE building. Midwest Stock Exchange is the one that was over the expressway, but they're all tied into the same electric.
Oh, okay.
But they also have a generator on the roof. But the, you know, but I mean, the CBOE was there with the traders and people that worked there. We're talking, you know, what, 3,000 people in that building?
Oh, yeah.
I mean, what does the data center have in there? I mean, I don't know if it's 10 or 2,000. I don't think it's 2,000, but I bet. And if all of a sudden one day you don't need it, what do they do? Just leave?
Yeah, that's happened before, too.
I mean, I have no idea how many people work in a data center. I mean, I would like to hope it's quite a few.
Maybe somebody will call it and tell you.
I mean, some of these places they keep talking about, all the people that are going to work there. What about the place down at the, I'm skipping here, we only got a minute left, but the place itself works, Jen. That was announced, or Audrey, that was announced, what, 3 years ago? Are they building anything down there? Did they ever start?
No, that's apparently not expansion. No, yeah.
Really?
It's just a huge hunk of land, too.
Yeah.
Is that the entire south side of the city that, oh, in many, there's it still looks like a war zone that's empty. There's plenty of room if they needed to do something out there.
Well, but then people react to everything. I mean, this just real short story because, like I say, we're running out of time here. But the White Sox, they're on the left side, on the east side of the river, the guys bought somebody a property, and of course, the city has come up with almost half a billion dollars for infrastructure because there wasn't any. That's another long story. But they're putting up the soccer stadium. We don't know why we need another soccer stadium. I have no idea, but we do. And so across the river is the Amtrak yards.
Right.
So the White Sox just bought the property from Amtrak, the idea of putting a new stadium there. Now, it's across the river. It has no real transportation from downtown, which is insane. It should be on this side of the river, but that's nobody's asking me. Well, so the Amtrak says we're going to move further south and have this huge facility where we take care of all the cars, you know, countrywide, because they all come through Chicago pretty much. Well, not all, but a lot of them. And now all of a sudden the neighbor goes, we don't want it down here. So now what? They sold this place. Now, if they can't move the Sox, where are they going to go?
The people in Bridgeport are yelling because they're going to have an Amtrak yard and they're going to lose Wrigley Field.
Well, yeah.
So they're getting screwed twice the other way.
So, but I mean, the idea, there's all kinds of vacant rail land on the south side. But every time you put something there, people got to bitch about it. I mean, I don't get it. But, I mean, at some point, you want industry, but you don't want it anywhere near your house. I mean, obviously, you want it by somebody else's house. But I mean, the politics and everything is just crazy, isn't it? I mean, it's hard to do anything, it seems.
Yeah. But people used to be proud to have a factory or, you know, light manufacturing building in their neighborhood. It was an anchor for jobs, for culture, everything. You know, it was a healthy thing. Whatever that was being made there, maybe it wasn't your favorite industry, but now that would just be a curse to have something like that in your neighborhood.
Yeah, we want the industry, but by the way, it better be in your neighborhood. So, Ed, what are interest rates? Are interest rates, this 4.8 here this morning, is that, are we reaching danger zone here or not?
I guess we'll just have to wait and see. I mean, they've been hanging around 6.5 this week. So it's I guess we'll just see what happens. But really would be nice for, I mean, two things would be nice. We had interest rates 6% under, and if all the banks could cut credit card rates from 25% to 30%, maybe down to 10% or 15%.
I'm with you on that one, but we get good luck with that. Over the whole.
Yeah, you know, that's how you could help. You could help the average American have the banks cut the credit card rates.
I did it so long ago. I either took the decade 2010 to 20, or it might have been 2010 to 2022, And I looked at the whenever our rates went from whatever down to when we get down to like 1.5% during COVID.
Yeah.
Over that 10 or 12 year period, credit card rates had actually gone up.
Yeah.
And the spread between whatever like the prime rate is versus the credit card rate continues to go up between, you know, real people and not so real people. When I say not so real people, nobody cares about you if you have a credit card, and I include myself in there. I mean, the idea that we should be paying 25% while Elon Musk is paying 3%, why do you think we have this problem in this country? I mean, duh.
I think that if you're going to charge 25 or 30, maybe you should be paying at least 6 or 7% on a passbook account.
You're very old school. These are logical things that nobody wants anymore. When you and I and John were younger, and this is before, the big inflation, your savings and loan paid people, 3, 3.25 on your passbook, something like that?
Yeah.
The mortgages were, I'm going to say, it's 6.25, roughly. So that left them 3% VIG for the building, the people, the loan officers, and, oh, by the way, the Little League uniforms, right? What do you think the scalp is now when they're paying people nothing and they're charging 25? That's a little bit bigger than 3, isn't it? Just saying.
Well, they're paying about 0.5%.
Yeah, and they're charging 20. It's a little bit... And everybody said how inefficient the savings and loans were. They managed to do it for 3% VIG, right?
Right, and they did it well.
Yeah, they did it well. And with a bunch of people in white shirts and ties that lived in the neighborhood. You know, it's sometimes this improvement, this constant improvement is lost on me. I just saying.
I think more credit unions would start to spring up about now.
You know, they are, and they're actually growing.
I've seen a few. I would think there's so much of a need for that. It'd be interesting.
Well, the credit union one is huge. The Naval Credit Union's advertising all over the place. You see buildings that have a credit union there. I mean, John, are you involved in any of them? I mean,
no, I have a small, account at one where I've also got a credit card, but there are better alternatives, interest rate wise, anyway.
You know, we could there's some that are around. You get a list. Some of them are like for churches that used to have a credit union. They're still legit, and you can there's like 5 people left in it. You could buy one of those things. You don't have to start one up. You could buy one. If we wanted to.
Here we go.
Yeah. Anyway, S&P futures down 23. NASDAQ futures down 130. We actually have come back from the lows. Thank both of you guys for covering it on a Wednesday. We missed on Monday.
My pleasure.
And back tomorrow. Stocks and Jacks. Good job, Andrew, as usual.
That's all, folks.